You are listening to the sermon podcast of Covenant Presbyterian Church. We are a community in Madison, Wisconsin, who gathers to worship, to learn, to serve, and to grow together in God's love. Please visit us online at www.covenantmadison.org, where you can find information about Covenant Ministries, as well as links to our online worship services and sermon podcasts.
Good morning. It's an honor to be with you here this morning. I've had a chance to visit at Covenant Presbyterian over the years. It's always fun to be back and see folks here, see people I know. I thought during the greeting of peace I should greet the choir because they have to look at my back for the next few minutes. So I know you're there. All is good. And Pastor Jessica said, you know, I know everything. She clearly had me confused with Google. Alphabetically, G, Google comes before H, Haslinger, so you know. Anyway, would you join your hearts with me in a moment of prayer? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you, O God, who sent your word to live among us. Amen. 2 days ago, I was standing at the spot of the deadliest attack on any Jewish community in the United States. I was at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. On the morning of October 27th, 2018, a killer, a 46-year-old man steeped in the hatred of Jews and Muslims and immigrants, entered the synagogue where three services were underway for the three separate congregations that used that building. Over the next 20 minutes, using an AR-15 rifle and three Glock 357 semi-automatic pistols, he killed 11 people and wounded seven more. Four of those killed were Holocaust survivors. That morning, as the news started to come in on my phone, I was standing outside the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, where in 1963, a bomb set by hate-filled people killed four young girls, three 14-year-olds and an 11-year-old, as they were getting ready for Sunday services. I walked across the street to a park where there's a memorial to Anne Frank, the young Jewish girl from Germany and then Amsterdam, who kept a diary that so many people have read. She died in a concentration camp in 1945. Hatred all around. So probably a good time just to pause for a moment and take a deep breath. The story of Paul, then called Saul, that we just heard starts out as a story of hatred. He was still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, the writer of the Acts of the Apostles tells us. Saul was on his way from Jerusalem to Damascus. He was looking for people who belonged to the way, the followers of Jesus, so that he could bring them bound back to Jerusalem. He was the one who held the coats of those who stoned an early follower of Jesus, a deacon named Stephen, stoned him to death. He was a Pharisee, one of those who held firmly to Jewish law and the place of the temple in their lives. They saw these Jesus followers as disloyal, as rivals, as troublemakers. Saul was a young man, probably in his 20s. He wanted to win the favor of this group, so he went after the Jesus followers with what he himself called zeal. It would not be too strong to say that Saul hated these followers of the way, until something happened. We heard the story of the vision on the road, the temporary blindness, surely the confusion he felt as his companions led him to Damascus. Here's one way to think about this. Suddenly, hatred encountered love, and love won. It actually happens sometimes. In November 2008, just a few days after the election of Barack Obama as president, a group of the former heads of the Ku Klux Klan and prominent neo-Nazis met secretly in a hotel room in Memphis, Tennessee. One of the stars of the gathering was a 19-year-old named Derek Black, a student at the New College of Florida and a radio show host. His father, Don Black, had created Stormfront, the internet's largest white nationalist site. His godfather was David Duke, the former Grand Wizard of the KKK, who had once been married to Derek's mother. Young Derek told the crowd at the hotel, "The great intellectual move to save white people started today." At college, as other students realized he was an ardent white supremacist, they began to isolate Derek, and he isolated himself, until he got an invitation from a student named Matthew Stevenson. "What are you doing Friday night?" Matthew was an Orthodox Jew, the only one at the college, so he began hosting small Shabbat dinners at his apartment. His guests were eclectic, Christians, atheists, blacks, Hispanics, and now he was inviting a rising star of the white supremacists to dine with them. The Washington Post had a story about Derek and Matthew. It said, "Matthew decided his best chance to affect Derek's thinking was not to ignore him or to confront him, but simply to include him." Maybe he'd never spent time with a Jewish person before, Matthew remembered thinking. Author Eli Saslow wrote that Matthew did this hoping that just by spending more and more time with this group, Derek would be able to begin seeing past the stereotypes to the people, to the humanity. Derek went once, and then again, and again, and a friendship began to form despite their suspicions of each other. A few other Jewish students from town joined the dinners, and Derek's views began to soften, slowly but steadily. Remember, he was a very public figure in the white nationalist movement, as was his family. So imagine the shockwaves when he posted a very public statement that included these words: "The things I have said, as well as my actions, have been harmful to people of color, people of Jewish descent, activists striving for opportunity and fairness for all. I am sorry for the damage done." As Rabbi Sharon Brous wrote about the Jewish students in her new book, The Amen Effect, Ancient Wisdom to Mend Our Broken Hearts and World, what did it take for them to open their homes week after week to engage in the painstaking work of stretching open another person's heart, of humanizing themselves to a neo-Nazi, of even finding humanity in him? Love had pushed out hate. Closer to home, many of you may remember the awful shooting at the Sikh Gurdwara in Oak Creek near Milwaukee in 2012, when a white supremacist entered the worship building on a Sunday morning and fatally shot six members of the congregation and wounding four others before killing himself. One of those killed was Satwat Singh Kalika, the president of the Gurdwara, who died trying to protect the congregation. His son, Pardeep Kalika, who you see in this picture, wanted to know what could drive someone to that level of hatred. He connected with Arna Michaelis, a former white supremacist who had grown up in Mequon. Arno had joined the white power movement when he was 16, coming out of a dysfunctional home, living with alcoholism, reveling in violence. He was a founding member of what became the largest racist skinhead organization in the world. He described himself as a reverend in the self-declared racial holy war. He played in a white power rock band. He attacked anyone who was black, Jewish, LGBTQ, anyone who wasn't white or straight. But then he began to encounter people who shook up his view of the world. He had a swastika tattooed on the middle finger of his right hand, and he later wrote, "One time I was greeted by a black lady at a McDonald's cash register with a smile as warm and unconditional as the sun. When she noticed the swastika tattoo on my finger, she said, 'You're a better person than that. I know that's not who you are.' Powerless against such compassion, I fled from her steady smile and authentic presence, never to return to that McDonald's again." Other things happened. His boss, who was Jewish, did not fire him despite the swastika on his jacket. A black coworker offered him half of his sandwich when Arno didn't bring lunch. A lesbian supervisor treated him with unexpected kindness. His love of music led him to the rave scene where he found himself dancing with people of different races. And they accepted him. And then he became a father. He watched his little girl at daycare play with delight with a diverse group of children. It took time, but Arno had rejected the white supremacy by the time he met Pardeep. They did not bond right away, of course, but soon they were speaking together to groups, writing a book together called The Gift of Our Wounds, a Sikh and a former white supremacist find forgiveness after hate. Love had once again overcome hate. Now let's join Ananias in Damascus. This is a statue outside the house in Damascus that's honored as the place where he met with Paul. You could hear Ananias' anxiety after going to visit this zeal-filled prosecutor of the followers of Jesus at the home on Straight Street. In his words, "Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much evil he has done to your saints in Jerusalem, and here he has authority from the chief priests to bind all who invoke your name." But Ananias took the message from Jesus to heart and went to see Saul, to bless him, to baptize him, to teach him about the way of Jesus. God's love transformed Saul, and Ananias' willingness to reach out and embrace Saul transformed the life of those early Christians. I don't want to be too simplistic about all of this. Evil does exist in our world. Evil killed people in the synagogue in Pittsburgh, in the Gurdwara in Oak Creek, in the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham. Evil killed people in Israel on October 7th and has killed so many in Gaza since then. Anti-Semitism and Islamophobia are surging in our nation right now. Remember that memorial to Anne Frank in the park in Birmingham? It had these words from 15-year-old Anne's diary on March 16, 1944, 5 months before the Nazis would capture her and her family. "How wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world." You and I may not be able to stop all the evil in the world, but maybe we can help transform one life and then another and then another. If we open ourselves to those who seem troubled and offer them another path. And if we can't do that, we can at least find ways to stand with those who are suffering. Let me go back to the people I met in Pittsburgh on Friday, 6 years after hate blasted its way through their house of worship. Peg Dorochko's husband, Rich Gottfried, was murdered at the synagogue. She said it was an evil attack on a sacred place, an attack from evil on goodness. But part of the healing process for her and the other victims' families includes creating a new space to try to uproot anti-Semitism. Michael Bernstein, who happens to be a UW-Madison philosophy grad, now chairs the Remember, Rebuild, Renew campaign to create an international institution dedicated to ending anti-Semitism through education, engagement, and action. It will be on this site, next to the sanctuary of the original synagogue. And others in Pittsburgh talked about the importance of all those who surrounded them with love and care and support in the wake of the day's tragedy. On the fence along the spot where the older buildings of the synagogue once stood are 101 pieces of art submitted by students from across the nation in what was called the Hearts Together Project. You get a glimpse of it here, but take a closer look at this one. You're not alone. This came from a student at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, the site of another mass shooting. The note with it says, "We are here for you." So even if we cannot always stop evil and hatred and violence, even if we cannot be Ananias for Paul, or Matthew Stevenson for Derek, or Pardeep for Arno, we can reach out to those who suffer from such tragedies. It really does matter. Suzanne Schreiber, a past president of the Tree of Life Synagogue, said that in the days after their tragedy, the city was leaning in, standing beside us, taking a breath with us. When Saul was rampaging against the early Christians, they leaned in, stood together, breathed together. When Ananias helped Saul live into his new call of love, that led to new communities where love defined their existence. So today, the challenge remains for us. How can we help love someone to overcome hate? How can we make God's love a reality? What can we take out of this sanctuary this morning? As Anne Frank wrote, "How wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world." Amen.